welcome to the 176th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I almost forgot who I was. I am a plant-based cardiologist in Southwest Florida, as well as an endurance athlete, and I'm training for the Ironman Chattanooga at the end of September, and it's hot here in Florida. Just a training update. I'm up to 16 to 17 miles on the long run on the weekends, and we did a 97-mile boiling bike ride last Sunday. And then I do riding and running and swimming during the week. I swim twice a week. We had a great swim today in Master's Swim class. The coach tested us. You know, everybody hates tests, and she kind of smirks. And she tested us on our ability to hold an all-out 50-yard sprint 10 times. So gave us plenty of rest in between. So it's a nice confidence builder to know that even though you're gassed, you're still going to live when you get to the other end of the pool. So it was a good workout. I'm feeling strong. My son-in-law and strength coach is doing well by me. I'm feeling stronger on the weights, increasing my hex bar lift and increasing my other weights pretty good and feel good about that. I'm not sore afterwards too much. I've been rolling out as per my posture coach, breaking up all those things that bend me in the wrong direction. And we worked on feet today. I've got not so great feet. I'm one of those flat-footed persons, so they're trying to build some arches and get my feet straightened out a little bit. So it's always a work in progress. Seems like every exam I have to assess myself, I have a lot of work to do, but it's always a challenge, so that's good. We're still experimenting on, you know, nutrition. That's the fourth discipline in triathlon, maybe one of the most important one of the most important parts of triathlon, especially when you get into the longer distances. And when it's hot, obviously it's hard to absorb. You know, when you're exercising, you divert blood flow away from your gut in the first place. And when it's hot, you divert even more away. And so how to get energy in to keep going is always a challenge. This weekend we experimented with Lara bars. If you haven't listened to How This Was Built episode in NPR and how the Lara bar got started, it's a great listen. Basically started in Lara's kitchen, and they're limited ingredients bars. I actually made one myself this week, so I'm going to test now this week. Self-made energy bars, just using dates and cherries and some walnuts. We'll see how that goes. But obviously Lara bars work, so if mine don't work out, we'll go back to the Lara bars. It's kind of always nice to play with different flavors on your own, so I guess that's the chemist in me. But those seem to work out well on the bike. And then when I did my long run this weekend, I actually did a concentrated scratch along with water. So that seemed to work for me as far as electrolytes. So we'll keep playing with this. We've got a few more weeks to go until I have to make a decision on what to use. There's always the factor in what do you carry, what do you put in special needs, how do you keep it cold, and all that kind of thing. So, but anyway, that's going good. So far, so good. I watched a documentary this week on the fittest man, CrossFit. The documentary was named Froning. It was unbelievable what this guy's work ethic was and his drive to train himself. He won the CrossFit Games 4 years in a row. And just his hope, you know, they went through his whole personality as a kid. He was just really, really driven as a kid and is just competitive all his life. And I think that's a huge part of some of this competing in, you know, these big events is to have it between the years and to be really competitive. I think certainly gives people a leg up. The interesting thing is that his nutrition was awful. I just wondered throughout the documentary, what if this guy had not been just stuffing down Taco Bell and Domino's Pizza, what he could have done. He bonked on several occasions during some of the events, and can't help but believe that it was secondary to the horrible, horrible diet that he took in. It just shows you what somebody young can get away with in the short term And obviously his he's starting to do this as a team CrossFit athlete now. He's no longer competing on his own. And I just don't think a body would hold up very much longer with the nutrition that he took in. Nevertheless, it was very, very inspiring to watch somebody push through these heavy competitions. And, you know, I always take that thing. I try to do a little imagery when I'm training and, you know, how to push through. And it's in, again, triathlon's head game is in any athletic endeavor. To kind of talk yourself through it. Your body can do a whole lot more than your head allows you to do. I guess that's probably in everything, as we'll get on to when we start talking nutrition here a little bit. But, you know, I think anytime you can watch something and learn something from somebody else and apply it to your own situation, it's always really helpful. So I like watching things that are motivating like that. So it kind of helps me to give myself a little kick forward when times are not going so good. There was a study I'd like to talk about that was actually published in the Journal of American Cardiology this month, and it looked at the cardiorespiratory fitness in 50-year-old men since 1972, and what that cardiorespiratory fitness predicted back then till now. And basically they had 500 individuals in the study. There were 500 men. Average age was about 50 years of age. And they did a single measurement of their VO2 max. And if you're not an athlete or somebody that knows anything about VO2 max, it's the ability of your body to uptake oxygen. So the ability of your body to take oxygen and make energy, your mitochondria. Some of it is genetic. Certainly it can be trained. It goes down as you get older. You know, people like Michael Phelps and Lance Armstrong had incredible VO2 maxes. There are athletes that do well that don't have a spectacular VO2 max. It's what they do with what they've got. It's kind of like the engine that you have and how you use it in different ways. But this study looked at 50-year-olds, one-time VO2 max, and they adjusted them for their physical activity otherwise, their smoking, if they drank alcohol, their body mass index. Interestingly, 93, and this was from Copenhagen. So this is in a place where people walk to work and people bicycle a lot. And 93% of these men had a BMI of 25 or less. So the normal BMI, 24.8. So these guys were all normal weight. No one was overweight. So it basically looked at their VO2 given a normal size person. And they divided them into four groups. People that were unfit, which was about 5% of the 5,000, and their VO2 max was 20 milliliters per kilogram per minute. A low normal group comprised about 45% of the population, and their VO2 max was 28 milliliters per kilogram per minute. And the high level functioning people, 45% of the population, and their VO2 max was 37 milliliters per kilogram per minute. And the above normal people comprised 5% of the population, and their VO2 max was 50 milliliters per kilogram per minute. And they followed them for 46 years, and in that follow-up, and again it started in 1972, and in that follow-up, 92% of them died, 42% of them died from cardiovascular disease. And what they found was that if your the people in group two versus low normal fitness versus the people that were unfit lived 2.1 years longer, the people that were high lived 2.9 years longer than the people that were lower, and the people that were most fit or above average lived 4.9 years versus that first group that was untrained. It also corresponded to 45 increased days of life for each millimeter of VO2 max that increased. So what, you know, what does all that say is that, one, you can look at somebody that's completely unfit, untrained, and just a little bit of exercise is really going to translate into longevity over the years. And of course, somebody that's really fit, you get more bang for your buck. But the important thing to note is that just exercising and being fit does make a difference if you look at survival. Now, how can you apply this to your life? Well, if you have a Garmin device, some people have Polar devices. You know, there's a lot of people have gone to wrist ways of looking at your heart rate. There's a calculation that some of these watches will do. A Garmin triathlon watch or Garmin running watch will calculate VO2 max with the wrist and with the chest strap as well Polar. But when they looked, another study looked at them, only the chest strap with the Garmin device was accurate when compared to a VO2 max done on a treadmill. So typically when you do a VO2 max, it's on a treadmill at a cardiologist office, and they look at the oxygen that you're able to consume over an exercise test that takes you to exhaustion. But the Garmin watches will actually look at your pace over time with your heart rate and do a calculation of your VO2 max. It's fairly accurate. So, you know, you have a choice of going and having a fancy test, or, you know, for the average guy or girl that's training this, you know, this chest strap and the Garmin watch will actually do a pretty good job estimating that. So, you know, if you have your Garmin watch, now is the time to go to My Stats and look at your VO2 max that's been calculated for you by Garmin. I am a big advocate of the chest straps versus the wrists. I think the wrists give you a fair reading, especially at rest. But when you start getting sweaty and you start exercising vigorously, they kind of lose contact and they're not real accurate. The Fitbit devices just aren't accurate at all. And I don't really think that the iWatches, they're really not made for, you know, true athletes to be doing, you know, to really look at heart rate. So if you really want to get an idea what your heart rate's doing, do the chest strap. They're not nearly as comfortable, obviously, but they do make chest straps now that have an elastic type band around them. So it's not that hard plastic that it used to be. That, you know, would kind of cut you up over if long endurance activity. So if you're interested in looking where you are, obviously you can get, you know, you can do that and calculate it yourself. You can always ask your cardiologist to do a VO2 max stress test on you as well. Was laughing at this, or at least we had a chuckle over this at the master swim class, because I told them about it. And it's like, you know, most of the people, there's several people that are younger than 50 swimming, and it's like, you know, now's the time to get in shape, because if you want to hang on, get that VO2 max up, you know, before you're 50, or at least get it up now, because it's really important. And even if you're, you know, over 50, you can train your VO2 max up, so it's very, very important to get your cardio in. You know, people argue back and forth, cardio versus strength training. You know, it's all important, so you got to do it all. Funny things that happened this week. I went to the hair to my get my hair done, get a haircut, and my hairdresser, who is always hounding me and making fun of being plant-based, and he talks about all the butter and the meat and everything that he eats, informed me that he was becoming vegan, and mainly because his partner was significantly overweight and has starting to get health problems, and he was told by the people that he worked with, because he works in the healthcare system, that he should adopt a plant-based diet. So my hairdresser was asking me about recipes and how to cook. Of course, he said he needed to use a little bit of olive oil, and I said he didn't need to use olive oil. But he's a good cook, and he's actually going to be able to pull this off. He was somewhat reluctant to commit himself, but he was, you know, going to be supportive of his partner and cook for his partner. I guess he's the primary cook in the household. So I thought it was interesting after all this time. But the funniest part of all that was, you know, when you're in a hair salon and people start to talk, everybody starts to listen, right? It's the gossip place, you know, everybody chimes in and everybody has an opinion. And when he started, he mentioned the word vegan, everybody in the place clammed up and ran the other direction. And it was obvious that people were trying to avoid the conversation. There was one other hairdresser that made a comment that she had a friend that ate healthy and exercised and was thin, and she still got cancer, so it was okay to eat butter. It's better than margarine. And, of course, I made, a comment that, what is healthy eating? And you can, just because you're thin doesn't mean you're invincible, because we all know you can eat a horrible diet and be thin and get sick. But for the most part, everybody ran the other direction. They didn't want to be any part of this vegan diet or, address their bad habits. So I'll be anxious to see in, 4 to 6 weeks when I go back for my next haircut, what's happening in the world of plant-based nutrition in my hair salon. It'll be really, really interesting. So it'll be something to keep you informed about, because, if that hair salon goes plant-based, then, the rest of the world is going to be close behind. So I have a few quotes for the week. There's always something that happens that, we can address and take home messages of things that happen. But, I get texts from some of my members with their glucose reading as we're trying to get their diabetes to go away with plant-based nutrition. So I have them text me their glucose 3 hours after dinner and the fasting glucose in the morning. And some of them are really good about texting me every morning, and some of them only text me when they have a good one, and some of them only text me when they have a bad one and they get afraid. For starters, I have to say that when people come to the nutrition classes, it makes all the difference in the world. The people that come to the nutrition classes, and we have 3 to choose from each week, those people are able to stay online and continue to get better and continue to refine their plant-based diet and do really well. The people that took maybe one course and, they think they got it, they don't do near as well, because there's just too many things out there that they stumble on. It's like, doing a couple tapes to try to learn a new language and think you got it, but you really can't speak the language fluently with just, one little course. But nevertheless, that's kind of what we're observing so far, which is very interesting. We may have to actually write some of these things up, because we're getting, getting some good data now with people that come to class and do well versus people that stop coming to class versus people that, maybe attended a few classes. But nevertheless, along with some of the texts I've got is, glucoses are elevated and they're eating perfectly, except for chocolate bars and cookies. And, it's, again, how we justify things, that how could, that one cookie or that one chocolate bar cause a problem? And it, it's like it happened one time. But obviously, if you let those come in, if that's part of your nutrition, then, it certainly happens more so than once. It's just a matter of becoming more and more aware. And the more people will text me their glucoses, the more they do become aware. That the evening glucose lets me know how they did for the day, but it starts to let them know how they did for the day. And, I think that if people can use that as a feedback, it's very, very helpful. The other thing that I heard this week, which was very, very interesting, was a person came to me for the first time, and they're starting in our program. And, we talk about the why. Why do you want to change? Why are you, why are you making this commitment? What are your goals? And he said that he did not want to face that wall of pill bottles at 8, that he has right now at 50 years of age, and he can't believe that, what's going to happen in the future if he's already facing a wall of bottles at age 50, so he wants to get off those medications. And that's pretty powerful, because, at 50 to start to be collecting a lot of medications can be very, very scary. On the other hand, a lot of people think that that's a natural progression. As you get older, you get high blood pressure and you take a medicine, you get diabetes, you take a medicine, everything's okay as long as you take the medicine. But what we have to remember, and what physicians should be informing their patients, that if you are on medicines for diabetes, cholesterol, or high blood pressure, they're not reversing your disease. They're merely putting a Band-Aid on the end symptoms and end results of the disease. It's fixing the glucose, but it's not fixing the high insulin levels that are ultimately going to cause the side effects of vascular disease and blindness and kidney failure, potentially. The blood pressure, the vascular disease, is not going to be reversed by blood pressure medications, and obviously the cholesterol medications aren't going to continue to keep plaque from building up in your arteries. So these are just temporary Band-Aids. So you can't become too comfortable when you have these pills saying that, well, I'm all right. It helps you tread water a little bit, but ultimately, people will continue to have their disease progress. The other thing interesting, and it's not unlike other people, is that this gentleman has gotten more out of shape and overweight as he's become more successful in his business. He was heavy growing up. He went into the Marines and came out fit and gradually gained that weight back. But it wasn't until he became more successful in his business and less physically active, even though he had more mental strain, more mental stress, that he started to gain weight. And that happens a lot of people as they become, again, more successful, that 40s and 50s. They let their guard down. They have more money to go out and eat. And nutrition becomes a back. It's just, what do I do for pleasure? It's grab a quick bite. And he was going through fast food restaurants, sometimes multiple times on a daily basis, grabbing something, grabbing sweet tea, the Southern diet down here, which is, you know, the deadly diet with sweet tea and everything fried, really catches up with people. But we were able to start, and, you know, we looked at menu items that he would like, things that he liked the taste of, because he grew up on a farm and he was exposed to all kinds of vegetables. And so we made simple meals for him to be able to eat and take with him in his truck for lunch, so that, you know, they could get started, you know, on a plant-based diet. I think the problem that people have a lot of times is they start grabbing all the cookbooks and start trying all these fancy recipes, and it becomes overwhelming and too complicated and too stressful, and then, you know, people fall off the wagon. So, you know, we have people start with really simple meals for the first month or so as they kind of get themselves weaned off of salt and sugar and oil, learn the taste of a sweet potato, learn the taste of greens, learn the taste of beans without, you know, salt, and find some, you know, some toppings that they can use that don't have a lot of salt, and just simple things that are easy to prepare, that it kind of have people get some early success, and then they can progress according to their comfort. Yesterday was the class 6 of our level 1 nutrition class. So we do 6 sessions for the level 1 people, and then they move on. And so I usually do those 6 sessions. Those are the introductory classes. So we go over diabetes and hypertension and nitric oxide production, and chemicals in the food, and, you know, we have a lecture each week and different food each week. And one of the ladies that it was funny when she started, she's not a member of the practice, she came in and we charge $175 for 6 classes if you're not a member. If you're a member, it's part of your membership. This part of your membership fee, so people can go to as many classes as they want. But if you're not a member of the practice, you can take my nutrition class for $175. So she came in, and it's like, you know, okay. My secretary said I'm supposed to collect $175 from you, and she said, well, what if I don't like it? And I was like, oh, you will. You really need to take it and stay. And, you know, by looking, I'd heard her already talking about diabetes and hypertension, and she walked with a cane, and she was, you know, in not very good shape. So I knew that she really needed the plant-based nutrition class. You know, I wasn't sure exactly that she was going to buy into it. And I think she had a family member that was plant-based, so I think she'd been encouraged by them to check it out. And she stuck it out. She came to every class and asked questions and tasted everything. And At first was, you know, she came shopping, even though she walked with a cane. So she really, you know, put a good effort into it and had tried some things and liked it. Unfortunately, other family members came to her house to visit, and they brought all kinds of junk food. But she was starting to recognize it, as opposed to before when, you know, it had just been part of people coming on vacation and having a lot of junk food around. But one of the questions that she asked yesterday was, you know, we talk about, you know, there's so many places, so many things out there to trip you up that are vegan versus plant-based. And she said, well, what about these toppings at the end of the aisle? There's these toppings you can get for your potatoes. And, you know, apparently they had these packages full of stuff that, you know, bacon, I don't know what they actually were. I have to check them out. But the ingredients, as far as she hadn't checked the ingredients or the salt, but she just, you know, they said healthy on the front. So she had picked those up. She also, she said, I suppose that vegan butter is not much better than regular butter. And it's like, no, vegan butter is usually made out of a bunch of different plant oils, and the plant oils can be changed into cholesterol in your body. And we really want to try to get people to stay away from the butters because they really add a lot of fat to your diet. And then she talked about, well, I was looking at, she says, have you ever had these vegan hot dogs? And it's like, well, you know, many, many moons ago. And not very good, and they're, you know, they have a fair amount of all the bad things that a regular hot dog has in them, with the exception of the animal product. And she said, yeah, I got them. And then she said, the lady, I was looking at them, and there was a lady there, and she says, oh, you should get them because they really taste good. So I did, and I ate one, and they're not very good, and I threw that package away. You know, so what it tells me is that she's really, really trying. You know, she's going to the grocery store with the plant-based in mind. And it's like she's speaking that language. She knows a few words, and she just can't quite get where she's headed. You know, headed to the produce aisle, but gets tripped up on the way there by things that say natural and healthy and plant-based or non-GMO. And I think this is very, very common in people when they're trying to make this transition, because, you know, it is... there's just so many things around to trip people up you hope that, you know, that's healthy. And people are looking, they, you know, even when they know that they're looking for things without oil, sometimes, you know, some of these crackers have a lot of seeds, seeds in them, you know, a lot of flaxseed or whatever, and there's a lot of ground flaxseed, and they can really trip people up with their glucose. And, you know, the more you can just, you know, get to the produce aisle and stay in the produce and keep it simple, the easier the transition will be, because there are just so many things, you know, that can get you. If, you know, one hint is, if you haven't noticed already, is, you know, always turn things over and look at the ingredients. The front side is going to be there. The marketing is on the front. The ingredients, you know, have to be listed in the back. And because of allergies, they list in bold the last sentence on the ingredients, whether there is wheat or soy or milk. So, you know, you know, or eggs. So you can find those ingredients out in the last, you can go all the way to the last sentence on the ingredients and kind of find those. The oil is a different subject. It's, you know, it's more scattered throughout the ingredients list. The different oils are scattered in different places. And again, whether there's flax seeds, hard to tell how much of, you know, what's in there. But, you know, you're really safest to look at the ingredients list. The other thing that this person, you know, continued to get tripped up on is people focused on grams of sugar in things. And, you know, we made a blueberry mango cobbler last night for dessert in nutrition class. And didn't have any added sugar, just the mango and the blueberries and oats. Those were the ingredients. And yet there were 14 grams of sugar, but it was in the form of fruit. And she was, well, this has a lot of sugar in it. But it's like, no, it's got a, you know, it's got sugar that comes from the fruit, and it's got fiber from the oats and the fiber from the fruit. It's a whole different thing than having an Oreo with 14 grams of sugar. So, you know, label reading continues to be, again, a language that needs to be learned in order to really get a handle on this. Another thing along a similar path is a patient that was away for the summer. You know, down here in Florida, People go north for the summer. It was funny when I first moved to Florida from West Virginia. I didn't go on vacation for a couple of years because we always came to Florida or Myrtle Beach for vacation. So it's like, well, I'm already at the beach. Where will I go? And I know that's a little bit narrow, but when that's kind of your focus all of your life, then it takes a while. We always did golfing vacations growing up, and it was always Florida and relatives and things like that. So, but a lot of people that live in Florida all the time, they go north in the summer to try to find some place that's not quite so hot and humid, and go visit family up north. So one of my members who has been a member less than a year, and was doing really, really well, went away for 3 months, and they went to visit family and traveled and was in a camper, and she came back, and things went pretty well for a while, and then she had the big slip. And when she met with my nurse, she talked about, her family, eating with the family was just, after a while, she was just, she couldn't say no anymore. They just hounded her. We made this for you. We did this special for you. You're here. It's already made. They're in an environment where everybody's eating a certain way, and she found it very, very difficult to stay on track. And, when I got into the room, we start talking about, it's a language, and, you have to kind of, you have to kind of make a decision that you're going to stay on track, and the reason why you're going to stay on track is for your health. But it is very difficult when people are trying to, pull you down, and her family were overweight. So again, everybody wants you to kind of, let's be unhealthy together. But when we talked a little bit further, really, the family was just, maybe the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. But, when they tried to go out to dinner, they went out to dinner once. And then, we'll just do this one time. And, we'll get into the bread this time. And, so it was really when they started to go out to dinner and she started to get in some of those foods that tripped her up before, particularly some breads and oils. That got her going down the wrong path. And then when she got with her family and they, tried to tempt her, she just couldn't hang on. And, it wasn't horrible. She stayed vegan for the most part, and, she's back and she's back on track. But, we talked a little bit about, the message you send to people, especially family, when sometimes you say yes and sometimes you say no. If one time you're invited over and you say, no, I can't eat this, I can't eat that, I can't eat this. And then the next time you do eat that, or I'll have a little bit of this, or you pick and choose what's the rules, so to speak. It sends a mixed message, and it sends a message that you're not entirely committed. So why should they? And, I likened it to something we'll go into a little bit later. But if they think that, there's a negotiation point, then people actually take that. And she, then we talked about, she had, been raised very, very strict. And there were so many rules in her life that at this stage in her life, she really, she really didn't want to have to follow a lot of rules, so to speak, that, it was just overwhelming to have rules all the time. And it's like, I understand that. And, we don't want to look at it as being, obviously punished for breaking the plant-based rules sort of being admonished for it. But it's more of understanding the rules. And I likened it, again, back to a language, where if you're learning to speak a language, there are certain rules with adverbs and verbs and, how do we put things together? And it's a little different in each language. And at first, or even, we talked about playing the piano, looking at the treble clef and, looking at the notes and, following the rules or learning a new sport. And, your hand goes this way and you swing this way. And there's so many things to think about. And that's exactly how plant-based nutrition is. There's so many things to think about. It's not necessarily rules, but there's so many nuances to it. What do I have to look for? Where's the oil? Where's the this? How do I put this together? That it is a little bit overwhelming at first until you learn the rules, and then you don't really have to think about them anymore. You just, you know, you eat the things you know and you eat the things you like, and you know that those are safe because that's the way you live. And it's very easy to stay true to what you eat because those are your new rules that you live by, but it's not, you know, it's not something that's enforced, but something that you're choosing to do and you understand it and you enjoy it, and that's your process. You know, so once you can play the piano, you don't have to translate notes or, you know, look at both hands or wonder where your hands go. The same way with, you know, I struggle with swimming is, you know, your stroke, you're trying to change things. I used to do it with golf. But once you're really, you know, you're honed in, you have those 10,000 hours, as Malcolm Gladwell would talk about, then you know, you're very comfortable in how to do that. And that's, again, I think why the nutrition class or some sort of support is very, very good for people, because they really learn, you know, you're learning the rules and you're learning the tricks of the trade from somebody. And that's, you know, what we like to do in our classes and you know, with our programs, is to be there to support and to troubleshoot and to guide people on, you know, learning the rules as they go. And I really do think that it takes, you know, a good year of doing this at least to really become familiar with it and not be so tripped up, because there's all this giant crossover with, you know, you have dietitians, you have nutritionists, you have healthcare coaches, you have chefs, you have physicians, and all these people have a little bit of a different perspective on things. And sometimes the message just varies enough to be confusing. You know, I walked by the TV at my mother's the other evening, and she said, "See, there's somebody on TV, and they're saying the right thing about coconut oil, finally." And it was a chef on a TV morning show or whatever. And, you know, there's so many, you know, yes, it is, no, it's not, and there's so many twists on things. And people get confused where to take their information, because a lot of people on the TV or on the internet are supposed experts, yet they're giving these opinions that, you know, may or may not be backed by fact. So it's very, very confusing. And sometimes the message is so subtle, sometimes people change their mind. Even in the nutrition conference that I was at, they had the cooking demonstrations, and all of a sudden people start using oil and salt. It's like, what's going on here? Because I thought, geez, there's 1,000 people in this room, 50% of them are probably plant-based, and now 50% of them are going to be confused about whether to use oil or not and how much salt to use. So, you know, the message can get confusing at times. And I've saved my rant, my biggest rant, for the end. I got two emails from the hospital this week. One was advertising their bariatric surgery program accreditation, and come join and learn more about it because they're celebrating. They got accredited, and they're going to celebrate with ice cream and parfaits. And it's like, oh, that's just great. We're going to have people come and give them sugar and fat and put more weight on them because, hey, we can just do a gastric bypass or a sleeve and you'll be okay and you can eat what you want. What a horrible message to send to people. And the second email that I got was invitation to celebrate doctor appreciation, and it had a giant pig on it. It was for a barbecue and pig roast. And, you know, obviously I'm not going to that. I'm not going to either one of them. It's very disappointing. But the you know, what I tie that the pig roast back to, you know, my patient and her family, is the hospital knows that the doctors are going to go to that. They want to go and over and indulge and eat the barbecue and eat the pig roast, and sometimes it's a lobster bake. So it's, you know, overindulgence, overeating, and it's, you know, typical Americans eating standard American diet, and these are physicians in a healthcare setting with a hospital. So if that's not proof that your doctor doesn't really care about nutrition or what it has to do with lifestyle diseases, I don't know what is. And, you know, if doctors did not eat that way, and if they said no, then the hospital wouldn't offer that food as an enticement for them to come and celebrate with them. They would offer plant-based or healthy alternatives. So until physicians adopt good nutrition and nutrition practices. The hospitals will keep doing this. And, you know, the vicious cycle continues. And it's just like the patient with their family. As long as you send a mixed message that it's okay sometimes, or, you know, I pick and choose, and they don't quite understand the rules, then they'll continue to try to pull you off the wagon, because there's always hope that you'll come over, back over to the other side, back over to the standard American diet side, the unhealthy side that drives the economy in so many different ways. So we all have to learn to take a plant food, plant-based, plant-strong stand. If we're lazy about our choices, then people are going to be lazy about what they offer us. And, you know, you have to have standards and, you know, learn to speak the language the best that you possibly can to ensure the best health that you can. We'd love to help. We have online programs. We have the nutrition class. You don't have to be a member to take that nutrition class if you're in town. If you'd like a free consultation to see whether or not this practice might be something that you like to do, either online, there's two or three different levels, level one, level two, level three. Go to drdelaney.com to check it out. It's drdulaney. Follow me on Instagram at Jamila Delaney, and check out the Facebook page. It links back to the website as well, and I hope to hear from you. You can, if you go to the website and you sign up, we'll send you some recipes. You can join our newsletter. We send a newsletter out to anybody that wants it every month with a recipe and some tidbits and what's going on in the practice and different challenges. So I'd like to have you join the newsletter. But until next time, get out and get your exercise. Get that VO2 max up. Get your legs strong and learn the Plant Strong language. See you next week.